When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Irish Illustrated Insider, brought to you by Catanzari Financial Services. Notre Dame with a 38-17 victory over Stanford to move to 5-0, moved up to number 6 in the AP poll, number 7 in the coaches poll. With Tim O'Malley and Pete Sampson, I'm Tim Priester, and that's about as well as a football team can play.
I was, on the list of most impressive Brian Kelly wins, I think everything trails Oklahoma. But you could make an argument this was number 2.
USC last year was great, too. That was quite a... But Stanford came in a lot better shape than USC did for that game. The overall effort, especially when you dissect it, I mean, they beat them. When you dissect it, it's a 38-17 game. It's shocking to me going back, it was ever 24-17 in the fourth quarter, and that Stanford had the ball. That seems like that never happened to how Notre Dame played that second half. They were... The defensive front, and I wrote about this, I couldn't stop from writing about it twice, the defensive front is the key to this team. Everything that's going to go wrong from here on out, that defensive front is going to come after you every game. Someone's going to have a bad game, not the defensive front.
Well, it shouldn't, because you're deep enough that your second unit can make plays as well, generally speaking. Listen to these words. Notre Dame physically manhandled Stanford. And it's true. I mean, it truly did happen. And, I think we're probably going to look back and say that this isn't one of Stanford's better teams. They haven't gained 400 yards in a game yet in 5 games. So they had some weaknesses, and Notre Dame exposed them. And the great thing that's happened here, especially in the last 2 weeks, is that over the course of 60 minutes, Notre Dame is just manhandling teams physically. Mm-hmm. And if you can do that against Stanford, you can do it against just about anybody.
I think that's why it was more impressive to me than USC was last year, because USC is manhandleable and Stanford is not. And so to sort of take it to Stanford in their own MO and do something that Brian Kelly said they've been trying to do for the last 9 years and had it. The best you could ever do against Stanford was play them to a draw toughness.
In 2012, they played them to an incredible draw.
And this one, they whipped them on both lines. And, I mean, I know Notre Dame's staff felt before the game that Jerry Tiller was going to have a huge night, and their defensive line was going to win that matchup, by a blowout. And I think it was probably even more impressive than that. And I agree with what you're saying, O'Malley. Like, your pass rush travels. Your quarterback can be accurate and inaccurate. Your receivers can make great catches, and they can drop the ball. You can have your secondary sometimes will get beat on 50-50 balls, but your pass rush travels week after week after week.
I think one of the more underrated things that I'm not sure anybody took into consideration was that Stanford lost their offensive line coach. He became the head coach at Rice, Bloomgren, and was replaced by Carberry, a guy that came from the Washington Redskins with a good resume, just like Bloomgren when he came, I think, from the Jets a few years ago. But, man, that offensive line is playing terribly, and they're going against, as you guys are saying, a really good defensive line. And Notre Dame's D-line exposed them. I mean, Tillery got... Did he get 3 of his 4 sacks? I mean, he got 2 of them, the last 2 on back-to-back plays.
Boy, he exploded on that last one.
Yeah.
He beat it.
I mean, he beat Herbig most of the night and then beating their other guard and a tackle on his sack. So he was outstanding. I thought Bilal played really, really good football. I mean, here he is, chasing a guy across the field on a crossing route and makes a play with the correct hand reaching across his body. It was beautiful.
How about this? You never thought I'd hear. Against Stanford, Azmar Bilal was the best player on the field in the third quarter. He was a dominant player. Every I did a little drive MVP that I really haven't used in a way to write about it, but it keeps me tracking who played well in the game when you're trying to remember after the game. Mm-hmm. And I'm writing down in the third quarter, Bilal. Bilal, I can't believe this.
I think that was
popping up that many times.
I think that was a defensive adjustment. They were getting wide of him in the first half, not too often, but they were getting wide of him, And I think you'll see when you, you know, when you watch the tape again that he's aligned wide and he's ready for that wide run. And it starts to, you know, why are you running Bryce Love wide? You know, when he's so quick to the hole and elusive. But I mean, they had to do different things. You know, 15 plays, 159 yards in the two drives that Stanford scored. Over the last 40-36, they ran 31 plays, gained 61 yards, including sacks. 15,
well, those count.
They do.
including when it's total yards, they count.
Yeah, that's... including sacks, 15 carries minus 5 yards. They were just absolutely dominant for the last 40 minutes of the game. And like you say, Tim, I mean, it was, you know, that miss by Justin Uten was significant. It was a 24-17 game. It was a 50-yard field goal. I'm not saying it was easy.
No, exactly. It wasn't like a shank or something, but I literally wrote down Notre Dame's special teams blinks first because you knew that our other favorite kick, Jet Toner, my favorite name, how could that escape me? I was like, this is going to be a problem if it comes down to it.
Man, there were two good kickers and two good punters because that Bailey kid was launching them too, just like Newsom does.
Yeah, it's, I mean, Stanford, for them to finish with one rushing first down is like,
oh my God.
Kind of like mind blowing that that's even possible for Stanford football to do that. But yeah, it's, I think, from top to bottom, coaching staff included, I mean, how often have we talked about where does Brian Kelly compare to David Shaw on the list of top coaches in college football? And Notre Dame staff absolutely worked over Stanford staff on Saturday night, in addition to having better material on both lines for the first time, probably in the last decade of this series. So it's there's a lot for Notre Dame to feel good about. The pass rush would be first on the list, but Ian Book would be a close second because I thought he was excellent and did not blink in a big moment at all. And I thought that when he came into the post-game press conference and was like, all right, let's do it. I mean, he's got like some real like dude qualities about him in the way that very few Notre Dame quarterbacks recently have had. And I think it shows on the sidelines, it shows on the field, it showed in the post-game press conference that, and it, I mean, I wrote about this talking to some of his high school coaches last week, but he has had a very kind of comfortable confidence about him for a very long time where you might be surprised about what he's doing, but he sure as hell is not.
I thought it was kind of interesting to see him on the sideline after he had thrown his fourth touchdown pass, and you can see that he's, you know, feeling good and feeling his oats a little bit, as he should. You know, this is 2 weeks in a row now where I'm just fascinated rewatching the game and looking at the nuances, right on down to, you know, hiding the ball on his hip, just like you should, just textbook before he completes the fourth and two pass to Cole Kmet. But it struck me, you know, those little turnout routes that Boykin's running or Finkel run or whatever. The pass is thrown just at the right time so that when the receiver looks back, the ball's coming. When you get the football to a receiver that early, you now open up greater possibilities for yards after the catch because he gets a chance to turn his head upfield, turn his hips upfield, and he doesn't have a defender right in his face to make the tackle. So I think the more we see Ian Book play, the more you're going to see yards after the catch, because he does such a great job with his timing of getting the football in the hands of the receivers.
I use the word easy in my column. He makes it look easy. I think you said it during the game. It's a modern attack. Those look screens and bubble screens that everybody knows how to run that Notre Dame simply could not. It's why it's you just gobble up yards easily. It's got to be frustrating.
And he, you know,
for coordinators,
he makes the hard throws.
Yeah. When Brandon Wimbush was playing.
No, defensive coordinators, when you say, oh, it's 8 yards. It's 8 yards. Right? What are we supposed to do about that?
Incredibly frustrating for Notre Dame for the last year and a half that they couldn't run that. Yeah. I mean, these are really like the basic fundamentals of modern college football, and Notre Dame had like no mastery of them at all until last week.
Which is why I said we've never seen this type of offense run successfully by Notre Dame. You know, look, he does make the easy throws look easy, but he makes hard throws look easy too. And the perfect example was that throw between Okereke and Malik, where from our vantage point, I don't know about you guys, you remember the one? It was a 19. It was a short corner by Boykin, not during the four catch series, but it was on the sideline that we're on in the press box, and it was over Okereke and in front of Malik. And when he released it, my first reaction was, that's going to get picked, but it was perfectly placed, you know, over Okereke, right into the hands of Boykin. He makes a lot of easy throws look easy. He makes hard throws look easy, too, rolling to his left, turns his hips, squares
up. That was
nice.
That was like an old touchdown pass to, throw. That was cool.
Yeah, the touchdown pass to Claypool. He's flush to his right. He breaks to the line of scrimmage, and everybody on defense is thinking he's going to run. He pulls up, turns his hips, and throws a strike to Claypool.
In keeping with our new two-week history of comparing Buck, you know who that looked like, don't you? Joe Montana, rolling out left and throwing it back to his right when he was younger, in fact. So, but Dexter Williams
The fact of the matter is, as someone that saw Joe Montana play, that there are body mannerisms that are very similar to his. It's just, it's true. It's just true. It is.
The Baker Mayfield, Trace McSorley comparison.
So Jeff Garcia, Joe Montana.
But
podcast.
We have two quarterbacks who can play.
That's correct. Named yeah. Pete, I did appreciate that tweet. I think some people took it wrong, but that was very good.
It was just so clear after Wake Forest that, like, this is what a modern college football offense looks like, that you're not going to go back. Like, going back to...
Explain the Thursday setup.
Thursday setup. I think, Priester, you asked a question about, Ian Book bringing to the offense what he does. And this was, the first question was about who's your starter. And he's like, we have two quarterbacks. I'm going to keep saying that. Just get used to it. Write it down. Don't ask me, basically. And then, Tim, you asked later about Ian Book's, like, sort of mobility behind the line of scrimmage, accuracy. And he said, it's sort of... It reminds me a little bit of Baker Mayfield and Trace McSorley. And you're like, all right, well, if you have a quarterback that reminds you of Trace McSorley and Baker Mayfield, then that's your starter, and he will be your starter for a long time. Like, to go back to the old offense, I feel like Chip Long just got a smartphone. And you're like, do we have the smartphone or the flip phone? I have two phones that can work. Like, these are both functional phones. You're not going back to the other
one. Speaking of smart, Chip Long looks a lot... Smarter than people thought he was a couple of weeks ago, and then maybe the offense.
The quarterback coach looks a little smarter than he did a couple of weeks ago, too.
Yeah, he does. He does. Yeah, it's amazing. All of a sudden. I haven't seen anybody give him credit, though, for Book's performance. But look, Book, a quarterback coach is really, especially a young quarterback coach, is really third in the pecking order of instruction behind the head coach / offensive coordinator. And then
As he was with Wimbush when he was getting based on our board.
I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Every time I see Tommy Rees coach on the field, I'm impressed. I like the way he handles himself. I like the way he communicates. But whatever. Ian Book's the real deal. Dexter Williams, he's the real deal, too. I really, really enjoyed watching, again, the game tape because just that – he's very patient, that hesitation, and then the explosiveness from patience to explosion is really, really impressive.
I thought it was significant that he came out for interviews after the game. I mean, as good as he looked, and he looked great. I don't think there's anything about his play that was that surprising, considering what we've seen in practice and even just like the flashes from last year. But Notre Dame is very conservative about guys coming back from suspension, arrest, what have you, to make them available for the media and to bring Dexter Williams out in that situation, I would hope for the sake of Notre Dame is a sign that, maybe he's got things figured out a little bit now. And there's more of a mature player in there because Kevin Sefferson never came out after his 4-game suspension and for good reason. So maybe I'm reading too much into this, like, quote-unquote new Dexter Williams. Certainly on Sunday's press conference, Brian Kelly was asked about injuries. And he started, like, Dexter came out okay from the game, which I thought was, maybe it's just habit that Dexter Williams felt
especially after 21 carries in the first game, too.
Yeah, he wasn't budgeted. Kelly said he wasn't budgeted for 21 carries, but once Jones got hurt, Armstrong, too. The game plan didn't lose Armstrong until Thursday.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it took Jones's injury for him to... I mean, once he had that 45-yard run, they start going to him
more.
Sure,
so Armstrong... Yeah. The game plan was to have Jafar Armstrong until Thursday when all of a sudden they didn't have Jafar Armstrong. Yeah. So then you kind of figure it out. Speaking of which, I guess we'll get into this, but the ankle injury to Tony Jones becomes a thing if he tweaks it and can't go because then it's a freshman backing up Dexter Williams in Blacksburg, and that's probably something they wanted to avoid. And I'm not just talking about, obviously, Williams will get the lion's share of carries, but he's got to come out. There are pass plays run when he comes out, and that's where it comes into. That's where you need Tony Jones, is when Dexter Williams needs a break. Tony Jones can pass block, and he can catch.
I think Jameer Smith, he's run hard. I mean, 2 games in a row, they were, you know, they were scrap carries, I guess, at the end of the game. But I think he's run hard, and it looks like he protects the football. Why? I think Dexter Williams looks like he's protecting the football well. Did I say that out loud before they go to Virginia Tech? I probably shouldn't, but I think he looks like he's protecting the football well. Terrible news on Alex Bars, of course, although I don't know if we got official confirmation, but as of 2 o'clock on Sunday, Brian Kelly said it looked like an ACL, MCL, and they expect him to miss the rest of the year, which means the rest of his remaining eligibility at Notre Dame.
Yeah, I mean, it's just depressing in general since, you know, Priest and I in particular have covered Alex Bars going back to high school at, like, recruiting events. It really is a tough blow for Notre Dame's offensive line. I think there's been some discussion about, like, well, Notre Dame, are they better prepared to deal with injuries or worse or somewhere in the middle? I just don't think there's any sugarcoating this one about – you can't spin this
You're not
as,
going to overestimate.
No. I mean, when Brian Kelly uses the word devastating for the locker room, I mean, he is the most he is always at peak optimism with, yes, like, next man in and, mm-hmm, like, we're going to be fine and we'll roll out there. But it's devastating for the locker room, I think, emotionally, physically. You know, Trevor Rulon, I think, can be fine.
Yeah, I think he's
–
But
this is – I mean, you're really – with the exception of Ian Book the last two games, Alex Barr is probably your best offensive player.
Yeah, they didn't just lose a captain. They lost one of their better players, too.
Yeah.
It's not – I think he was their best offensive lineman this year, obviously, because he was good at every game. That's one way of putting it. Like, Musser has done a great job, but Musser wasn't as good against Michigan as Barr was. So, Barr is the best offensive lineman this year. And it's – now, losing Musser would be probably more brutal because of the position he plays. But this is – yeah, this is – he's a confident guy. He and Mustafa together kind of gave them that edge of, use Mike Bray's word, of men in the inside of the line, and it's can't be overstated in the offensive line.
I think Bars is a bigger loss. Let's say choosing between Bars and Mustafa.
Right,
I think Bars is a bigger loss because Rulon could play center. You don't put your center on the move generally. He's holding the point of attack.
Schematically, you're saying it could be a bigger issue.
Bars is on the move. Now, you know, I thought Rulon played exceptionally aggressive after he came in for Bars. I reevaluated my comments on last Monday about Rulon coming out of Wake Forest, having watched it a second time, and I thought he played pretty well. I must have focused in on some of the bad plays where he flailed a little bit as a first-time starter, mm-hmm, will in that situation on the road. Rulon, I think, will – Rulon's game, and he'll go after it. But you cannot overestimate the loss of Alex Bars, as Pete said, you know, in the locker room. But just the fact that he is their best offensive lineman.
I mean, it's like now you're at a point, Alex Bars, Sean Crawford, Myron Tagovailoa, Mosa. It's starting to get more and more significant. And, like, Virginia Tech is not going to care at all. They're down their starting quarterback.
No, and you can I mean, we'll get into Virginia Tech a little bit later, but you can forget about that Old Dominion crap now because, I mean, Notre Dame's going there to play. They learned a very valuable lesson. Obviously, they did not take Old Dominion.
They had their Ball State game, except they lost it.
Exactly. Well, except that, yeah, they were at Old Dominion and they weren't, you know, whereas Notre Dame was at home against Ball State. Ball State was probably the one game where I didn't think Bars played particularly well, but him and a lot of other guys. I thought it was interesting, and I think this is really good, especially in light of the fact that Brian Kelly says Aaron Banks is practicing well. I think it is good to have a beef alternative at left guard with Aaron Banks. He's 320, he's just shy of 6'6", 320. I've liked him since the day he first came in. I think he's mobile enough to... mobile enough to play tackle, but they're moving him into guard, which is probably an even better fit for him.
Yeah, it's just I'm trying to think of like where this could be a positive. I can't think of anything.
If
Virginia Tech wasn't this week, it'd be like Pittsburgh by Navy, you know, maybe you have some time to like grow the new, but like you're just going to get your butt thrown in the fire at Lane Stadium, it's going to be very, very difficult for Rulon or Banks, whoever to throw out there.
And I think because of what you just said, Lane Stadium and Virginia Tech, I really think this week they will rely more on Rulon until the end of this game. Like, Rulon is going to be the man this week, and then they can start looking into Banks, Slug, Rulon, growing into the position. Yeah. They're not going to rely on Aaron Banks going out there in Lane Stadium.
No, but I don't anticipate Rulon losing his starting job. It's just a matter of how much.
No, but rotating.
Much Banks rotates, we'll find out. All right, segment two, whole bunch of questions, burning up the boards. Coming back next.
Catanzarit Financial Services is a safe harbor providing guidance to clients on anything that affects them financially, including retirement planning, asset management, and estate planning. Catanzarit Financial Services also leads retirement planning classes in South Bend and Elkhart, Indiana. Log on to CatanzaritFinancialServices.com.
Segment two, burning up the boards. Our first question is from SM29 Irish. Where does this game rank among Brian Kelly's biggest wins at Notre Dame?
As I said in the first segment, I'll go two behind Oklahoma. I mean,
time of the game is all we're ever talking about,
like,
when we do this.
It's super difficult to, like,
it has a lot to do with
look at it. Like, how is this going to be in November if they lose at Virginia Tech next week? I would probably think less of the Stanford performance. But just based on, like, what happened, about how good Stanford is, I mean, it's like, he smoked Michigan with Brady Hoke. That Michigan team stunk, and I think we knew Brady Hoke wasn't that good to begin with. USC was wobbling coming into the game last year. I mean, NC State was an impressive win at the time. I thought Georgia Tech was good in 2015, and Georgia Tech was terrible at the end of the year. But I just think I have the most certainty that Stanford will prove to be pretty good, and David Shaw is really good, and that's why I think this one was outstanding.
Yeah, obviously Oklahoma's first, because I'm still shocked Notre Dame won that game.
giddy almost.
As I was, you know, as people saw the expression on my face during our instant analysis back then. I guess I would put it number two. I think the back-to-back USC-NC State performance.
It's kind of like an entity.
Year,
it's like an entity right
yeah,
there.
I mean,
right?
Those two ran together. And, it was so impressive. But, yes, it is. Now, I think this is one of David Shaw's lesser Stanford teams. So that means they'll go, 10-3?
Yeah, rebuilding here.
They've won eight twice or eight once and nine another time. They went 8-5.
Might be once.
Yeah, once.
He's 77-23, so you can't put too many in there.
No, and he went 9-5
last year.
Right. So
he went 10-3 the year when they came limping in.
I mean, you know, it's a big win, but now going to Virginia Tech, I don't know where that would rank or not, but I mean, it's going to be a huge challenge for Notre Dame going on the road to win that game.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of ways to look at these rankings, but if you are going with time of the game, the impact it has on Notre Dame in a national scale, Oklahoma's clearly won, because everyone picked Oklahoma to beat Notre Dame, that undefeated Notre Dame team. All of a sudden, Notre Dame was in the top three.
Yeah.
Last year, as great as those two wins were, Notre Dame had a loss. They still had to respected one-loss team, maybe the most well-respected one-loss team, because Georgia was proved to be outstanding.
Yeah.
But they were, like, even when they lost to Clemson, there was that back and forth, is Notre Dame going to get in? And they started trending down, and they might not have gotten in had they beaten Stanford with Oklahoma. Right. This team would have gotten in for sure last year at 11-1. So this is an undefeated team winning a top 10 game. So it's right after Oklahoma. And then, of course, you know, what was the most important game? Well, we were sitting out at USC when they went 12-0. That was the most important game, but it was not the level of win. They were expected to win that game.
Right.
So this is probably the most impressive after Oklahoma. And people remember that Michigan State game. Notre Dame was favored, and no one thought anything of that Michigan State team that went 13-1.
No.
It's got nothing to do with at the time of the game. Clearly, that's the best team he's beaten.
That game was almost unwatchable as well.
Yeah, right. That's true. It almost doesn't count. I mean, that's the best team he's beaten, Brian Kelly, but that has nothing to do with the time of the game and the impact nationally.
Right. At Cratch 44, simple question. Is Notre Dame good this year? I don't trust it.
This speaks for all of my friends that are going to the Virginia Tech game, by the way, because the last time I saw these guys that I went to school with was in South Beach, Miami. Mm. And I tried to talk them into not going in, because, like, I don't know, guys, this might not be great. There's a lot of that.
Well, they're good. They're good. They are good. I mean, this is. Well, I'm sorry, I asked a question. You guys answered.
I mean, they could be. They're good, and they could lose on Saturday.
Right.
I don't think if one's true, the other one doesn't need to be false.
I'll give you a good little rundown here of why some people don't trust it. Because when I see my friends from Notre Dame, it tends to be a big game. These are the last three attended: Miami, Clemson, Florida State. So people don't really want to embrace things that are and Texas. Texas.
Okay, like, you can say, for one, they have a legitimate quarterback. And for two, they have a legitimate defense.
The one thing I will say, and this is the only reason I would couch any of this, is at no point, Pete, when you and I were doing that podcast last year against Miami, did we think anything like that was going to happen? We both picked Notre Dame to win.
By two touchdowns.
They had the ultimate running game. They had a great defense at the time. They had shown a weakness in the defense at the end of the game versus Wake Forest, and we weren't that worried about the quarterback at that point. He had just lit up Wake. So I agree with you that they have a legitimate defensive quarterback, but when people say, like, when's the last team been this positive on Notre Dame, I thought Notre Dame was great when they beat USC and NC State last year.
They were. And they went into Miami, and they weren't prepared the same way Virginia Tech went into a game that they weren't prepared to play.
Yes. Going into Miami last year, were there, like, cracks in the armor? Maybe, because you could see, like, there were clearly some things Notre Dame could not do offensively, but they were so great at the things that they could. This offense, I feel like, can do everything pretty well. So that gives me a little bit more confidence about who Notre Dame is and what they're able to achieve. I mean, O'Malley, your point is like, geez, it's hard to win on the road. Like, that, why don't your friends come to South Bend?
Yes, like, I don't know. I don't know what they're doing picking these Miami and Clemson games, right? Florida State, Texas. But, yeah, this is. I just like the question because he speaks for so many Notre Dame fans right now. It's just the I don't trust is great.
Yeah. I love the simplicity of the question. I don't think it was asked facetiously.
He's actually worried.
He is, and I get that. We get that. At TK Browns, has Clark Lee met or exceeded your expectations?
Since we're only 5 weeks in, I'll just say met. Because once again, it's a
you can only base upon five games. Through five games, has he met or exceeded your expectations?
I guess with the pass rush being what Elston said, he's exceeded it. Because when Elston said, I think we could be better pass rush in 2012, I was, there. Slow your roll, man.
But, and there's really no doubt about that, right?
Oh, they get after it. really get after it. And I've said, answered on the board a couple times, that this statistically the defense won't top 2012 because it took teams months to score against the 2012 unit, but doesn't mean you can't be a better defense when the chips are down after November and you're going into these situations. Yeah. So they really can grow with this pass rush. So I guess he's exceeded my expectations. I had high expectations, though.
Yeah, I'd echo what you said. I thought he'd be really good, and he's probably been a couple clicks on the dial better than really good.
I thought this past game was the huge test. And again, Stanford apparently has not put it all together offensively because they haven't had 400 yards total offense yet. But I thought this was a significant test because, we're all impressed with Costello. Bryce Love is great. I expected the Stanford offensive line when the season started to be the best on Notre Dame's schedule, and it certainly isn't. Certainly didn't look that way the other night.
I hope it is,
that'd be great. But just to the level of consistency up to this point, there were the long touchdown drives in the first three games in the fourth quarter, but you tied that to the offense and their inability to stay on the field. So I would say through five games, I would say exceeded.
Irish, I was tailgating. Is this the same Ian Book you saw in August? How could he be this good and not have played more earlier in the season?
We never had an opportunity to see Ian Book. Well, obviously, you don't have an opportunity to see him in these game-type situations, but no, we've never seen Ian Book play like this in practice. We couldn't suspect that he would be this good.
It's inverse O'Malley, Tony Jones Jr. from 2017. That's what's happening right now.
I think we saw Ian Book in drills, and we were like, wow, he throws the ball more accurately than Wimbush does.
He throws a good ball. Mechanically, he's really, really sound.
I think when Ian Book impressed me the most was when he would be like spots against LSU, not the touchdown to Boykin, that was Boykin, but that he escapes for a 20-yard run when you need it, that he can throw on the run, but you're obviously still thinking, well, whatever number of passes he threw last year, he had four picks, and three of them were kind of in plus territory. One ended the game, not that they would have won, against Miami. So there's always something you look at Book and think, he must not be as good as we see flashes. As it turns out, there has been two straight games of flashing Ian Book operating at peak efficiency.
This would be one of those times where if Brian Kelly was being totally honest, he would use the S word, surprise, with how Ian Book has played, because I don't think the coaching staff, talking to people around the Goob for the last year, would have said anything like this was coming or imminent or possible.
Last year they told you that he had practice issues, like he was not that consistent in practice, means you're never winning a job for Wimbush.
It was what I had heard last year when I asked people, like, why don't you play Book in November, was like, because he makes the same mistakes that Brandon Wimbush makes.
I always felt like, I've said this a couple times, that, when he'd get in a game, I've got to make something happen, and he forced some things. But Brian Kelly says he's a lot stronger. I think you can see that. The one thing I didn't think that he'd be able to do as well as Wimbush was avoid the rush when it's crashing down on him and escape. But he did that, as Doug Flutie called it. He has that little fish hook move.
You're not supposed to do that.
Where he spins
but
away.
But he does it well.
You can see him looking, checking his peripheral vision a lot of times. He knows where everybody is. But I have thoroughly enjoyed going over the game tape after getting back from the game, because just so many nuances that he does well. Like that 19-yard pass to Cole Kmet on 4th-and-2 where he fakes and puts it on the hip. It's just everything is so fundamentally sound. And then the ability to execute this vast array of different throws, whether rolling left or right, the diving throw that he threw to Michael Young the other night just showed great athleticism. It lost 3 yards. But it shows you that...
Yeah, he didn't make a play at a loss of 3 yards.
Right,
yeah.
Right. But I think Flutie said that's like the best 3-yard loss I've ever seen. I mean, he is just so dynamic in so many ways. And I think the Claypool, I described that earlier, the Claypool touchdown pass, watch that again and see the nuances of how he makes that happen. It's really impressive.
I don't remember the game. It was probably LSU. I mean, there was a game where I distinctly remember watching Ian Book run a play-action fake handoff where he turned to his left to hand the ball off, and the running back was on the other side of him. So there was not like this all this magic happening last year behind the scenes with him. He was a young quarterback who didn't really get it all figured out. So I think what's happened with him, maybe it's a little bit more similar to DeShone Kizer, because nobody around Notre Dame would have said in spring ball, this guy's totally fine, future pro. He was third on the depth chart and was outplayed by Montgomery Van Gorder in the spring game. So I think what Ian Book is doing is a real surprise, and that's why college football is great, because you get real surprises, and Ian Book's one of them.
At Sarge103, should we be concerned about offensive line and running back depth, or is the schedule favorable enough to allow new players to gain a foothold and provide quality play?
The schedule has nothing to do with it. No, it's not. I mean, it's a concern. I don't think you can look at schedule and say, oh, okay, well, that's going to be easy enough. You lost. We talked about it in the first segment. Alex Bars is a real quality college football player and a great leader on this team, and it's significant. You can't overestimate it.
I think if they played Pitt this week with a bye, this would be a better argument about the schedule. But they are getting thrown into the one situation that you want to have communication for a new offensive lineman, the loudest place they will be. So I would be concerned about offensive line depth in that they lost the guy. They can't lose. There's one left. They can't lose. I like Banks and Lug as backups, but I don't know what they're going to look like. What if they get pressed into action along with Ruland? Ruland doesn't have to get hurt. What if somebody else gets hurt? Right. That's why you have to worry about the offensive line.
And I want to say this, and I said it in the tail of the tape. Tommy Kramer, he has got to start playing better football, better, more consistent football. His team, his offensive line absolutely is counting on him, and he's got to play better than he did the other night.
I think that the injuries are to the point now where they will ultimately cost Notre Dame a game at some point.
I think they're like one away from that, where you have a defensive lineman type thing, Coney or a Tranquil.
I feel like they're there right now, and to get to Priester's point, I think it's the good one. Like, the schedule doesn't have anything to do with it, because you can't fake your way to 12-0.
No.
And I think Notre Dame's going to have to cobble together and, like, maybe, well, you know, have like a Pittsburgh type moment where you escape a game that you totally should have lost, like the 2012 performance there, because I don't. Losing Bars is like taking out a piece of your backbone, I think, for the program.
Get more into running back on Thursday, because we have probably a lot to discuss for the running back situation. If we find out Tony Jones is questionable from Brian Kelly tomorrow, that really means doubtful, right? Because you got to be able to perform to be out there too. You're not just able to run.
Well, that was kind of
running back.
That was kind of why I wanted to see Flemister carry the ball a little bit more than Avery Davis has. You know, I mean, there had to be some carries there, the touches with Avery Davis that could have gone to Flemister, although now Jameer Smith appears to be ahead of him. So, I mean, I like Jameer Smith, what he shows. I think that he can run hard and protect the football, but all the other aspects, you don't want to get into that. So I think, Pete, I would stop short of saying, when you say they're at that, I mean, you mean one more in the I mean, they're at the tipping point? Is that what you're saying?
I think that their roster, if you said, like, this is At the beginning of the season, you said, here's your starting offensive line. It's Eichenberg, Ruland, Mustafa, Kramer, and Kainsey. Would you sit there and say, like, well, that's an offense that can go 12-0?
Well, I didn't think Alex Barnes was that good when the season started. Yeah. And he proved to be very, very good through the first 5 weeks. I didn't think that he had reached his potential is what I mean. Where are we at?
At BT Incow. At B Tin Cow. I'm going to read that over.
AU, we're butchering it.
BT. He wants to know how good Kareem is. Clearly not 100% healthy, but is he the second best defensive lineman on this team?
Yeah, I think so.
The beautiful thing is he might be the third. That's how good the defensive line is, right?
Well, I mean, look how productive he is, and he literally has sprained and or tweaked his ankle every game. And
violently.
This is the thing that cracks me up is that the last two games, when he came out of the game, he looked banged up again, and bam, as soon as he came back in, he was even more explosive than he was before he left the game with an injury. I think he's become a really, really good college defensive end. And is he their second best? I would say
overall, probably, but boy,
yeah, but Aquara's right there, and Aquara is deceptively good against the run. He's just around the football, whether he's pass rushing or defending the run.
Said in the summer, Khalid Kareem would be the most improved player on defense, and I'm going to comfortably stand by that.
That's
now
a good call.
So I'm no longer going on a limb there.
That's a good call.
I'm going to lose my Monday musing summer bet that Kareem was going to lead the team in sacks because Jerry Tillery's
it's hard to come back from that.
Yeah, when you're getting four in a game,
four it makes a game. It's a little waiting
for seven for the year. At Brooks Beer 1, do you see any of the junior defensive ends testing the NFL waters after this season?
I could see Khalid Kareem definitely. Doing it because he's on track to graduate in December, so he'll have his degree after the season. I don't know why. He certainly will be in the I would like NFL feedback group.
And
then I think he'll have a decision to make.
NFL feedback group, if Brian Kelly tells us exactly when we press him on it in early January is when he finally kind of tells you who really did it, will be Julian Love, Khalid Kareem, Julian Okwara, and Chase Claypool. We'll put their names in for testing.
Totally agree.
And I don't know who would leave. Well, Okwara I don't think will leave. And then we just kind of got a note recently that Julian Love might be considering the job.
Well, and I mean,
he has 33 passes.
Right. Yeah, if you were Julian Love.
Exactly. Yeah. You know. And then Claypool, because I don't know, I think someone told Peter Tim 2 years ago that Chase Claypool would probably test the waters when he was a junior, right? So that's
whether he was ready or not.
I'm sticking with that one. But hey, Claypool, no matter what happens, if he doesn't get drafted, will be in the NFL running around tackling people on kickoffs and punts for a very long time if he wants to.
At Big Mac 24, are there any more titles that can be added to Mike Elson that would keep him from leaving for a coaching job?
I think he's sort of maxed those out.
Czar of the defensive line.
Like Mike Elson, I believe, is well compensated to be an assistant coach at Notre Dame, probably more so than he would be to be a head coach somewhere else at the Mac level.
At the Mac level, yeah.
And I think that's the
guy. No, that's the guy's
that
name. That doesn't mean that he thought.
No.
He's trying to get him to whatever
his Yeah, school. It's Big Mac.
Like, do you think I could hire him at McDonald's?
Well, and it's Mac, M-A-A-C.
I think he's probably going to be here until he decides he wants to leave, and at that point it will have nothing to do with pay or titles, especially pay, because he'll probably be taking a pay cut a la Chuck Martin when he went to Miami, Ohio.
He likes it here. His family likes it here. He's ensconced in the community now, and I think while Brian Kelly's here, Mike Elston will be here. And then, unless Mike Elston could become, I mean, I guess he could become defensive coordinator for Brian Kelly. I just think Mike Elston will probably leave when Brian Kelly leaves, and that might be the time he looks for a head coaching job. What did Brian Kelly tell you about Mike Elston in the summer?
Most prepared assistant he's ever had in his entire career to be a head coach.
So hopefully he's still here next year because he's a heck of a defensive line coach. Remember those people telling us Keith Gilmore was a big upgrade over Mike Elston, the defensive line?
Yeah.
Those people were wrong because Mike Elston has the five best defensive lines of Kelly's 8 years, and Mike and Keith Gilmore would have the three that are right after that. If you want to look at it that way, that's what it breaks down as.
Yeah.
Dashing Domer, is Jameer Smith ahead of Sebo Flemister, and do you expect a freshman running back to play a key role at Virginia Tech?
Yes and no. I mean, clearly Jameer Smith's ahead of Flemister, although Flemister apparently did the term concussion get used? That they got injured in practice the week between like Ball State and Vanderbilt?
Yeah, I don't think they used the term, but
he got injured.
Yes, he did. And then remember, Jameer Smith traveled. I thought somebody
pointed out Wake Forest, though.
Right. I thought it might be from North Carolina, but now it seems like he is a little ahead of him.
I mean, he also enrolled early.
True.
So, I mean, that's part of it as well. He's missed both. I mean, both those guys missed time in August. So they could be getting to the point where they're just healthy for a little bit and the coaches have a chance to see what they can do. But now there's no choice. I mean, Jameer Smith will get some carries at Virginia Tech. If he plays a key role, I think Notre Dame is in a lot of trouble.
Go fight, win, go Irish. To quote O'Malley, is it time to couch the Avery Davis experiment? They seem like wasted touches.
You know, not wasted touches, and they can't couch it now because Tony Jones might not be fully healthy. I'd rather see Avery Davis out there if Tony Jones is limping around. It's just that when you watch Tony Jones pass protection versus Avery Davis in pass protection, there's a massive difference.
Well, and Avery Davis has to hold on to the football. And he was spitting it up the whole, running it and trying to catch it.
And has anybody, as much as people love the Avery Davis idea, the idea of him being quick and catching passes out of the backfield, has anybody looked better catching passes out of the backfield than Tony Jones this year on those wheel routes? I mean, that's the guy
I think you
trust to do it.
Yeah, he had the two wheel routes. I mean, I'd say Armstrong's even.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, well, he's not available in the next couple of weeks either. But he had the two wheel routes and he had the little circle route against Wake Forest. I know he was open, but you guys can be open in the offense too. He makes plays. He's the compliment for Dexter Williams. They need him healthy this week.
And speaking of, let me just insert, if people haven't heard, Jafar Armstrong will miss this week, will miss Pittsburgh. Then comes the bye week, and Brian Kelly expects him back for, who is that after the bye week?
Navy.
San Diego.
San Diego. Yeah. I'm leaving tomorrow.
No way Jafar Armstrong wants to miss that game.
Tim is traveling straight from Blacksburg to San Diego.
But I said the Avery Davis couching experiment before Tony Jones got hurt and before Jafar Armstrong was out. Because I thought, why would you have Armstrong, Jones, and Williams and force feed Avery Davis?
You're exactly right. I mean, we were talking about this Thursday on the podcast, I think, is like, what was Dexter Williams' role going to be? Ideally, it was going to be taking Avery Davis' touches away. And then it turned into, now you're the number one back by far, and Avery Davis is number two, which is less ideal. But still, Dexter Williams is ahead of Avery Davis. That was the point you were trying to make, and that still holds.
Jay Thunders, please rank the remaining games and degree of difficulty. Is there a trap game in the mix? When you're undefeated, they are all trap games. Pete Sampson and Tim Priester.
They're all trap games.
Yes, because you're a favorite. So.
Okay. My list would be in toughest to easiest: 1, Virginia Tech; 2, USC; 3, Syracuse; 4, Navy; 5, Northwestern; 6, Florida State; and 7, Pittsburgh.
We only have two alike. 6 and 7, quite obviously, are Florida State and Pittsburgh. That cannot be. Yeah.
I mean, if you want to argue Pittsburgh is tougher than Florida State, go for it. I know. It's like, that's fine.
No, I think Florida State has to be tougher than Pittsburgh.
That is bad audio.
You know what? Yeah, that would be bad. I'm not even going to give my theory on Pittsburgh. Forget it. So mine is USC, then Virginia Tech, then Northwestern, because it's a true road game and they can defend a little bit, right, Tim? And then I think Syracuse just is a confident team, and they have a good offense and a quarterback, though he might not be alive at the point of that game. Gets hit a lot, man, Eric Dungy. And Navy is certainly ahead of Florida State, because who would you rather play? Guys that don't care about anything, or a dude that's going to keep drilling you in your knee for 60 minutes? Navy is ahead of Florida State in any rational realm.
Florida State 6 and Pittsburgh 7?
Yeah.
And where did you have Syracuse?
I have Syracuse 4. I have the road games higher.
All right. Well, O'Malley and I picked exactly the same. I'm looking at USC in game 12.
Me too. That's why I am too.
On the road. And I know Notre Dame's gone there, you know, 6 years ago and won when they were undefeated and had to. But I would still take USC 1, but I certainly could argue for Virginia Tech being 1.
Our argument is 11-0 against a team looking to beat you and make their season.
I think
sticks.
that's sort of why I have Syracuse as high as I do, because there's like a karma element involved in it about like, hey, let's just move this game to New York City because we're Notre Dame.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Oh, crap, you're 10-0 and Syracuse is good.
Because when Northwestern plays Notre Dame, they're going to play one of their better games.
They will. I agree.
Feel that way,
including in the second half.
And it's after Navy.
Because they've been shut out in the second half 3 times.
And it's after Navy.
Well, that bodes well for Notre Dame in the second half. But I think normally we'd have Navy a little bit.
Syracuse is too good to have Navy ahead of them.
That's here's the why I don't have Navy higher, because Ian Book's the quarterback, and that will certainly lessen Navy's opportunity to beat Notre Dame.
That's a great point, because when you get your eight possessions with Ian Book, you score seven touchdowns as opposed to maybe one. So, but Florida State is ahead of Pitt just because they're better. I mean, they have better players.
This will be one of those games where Notre Dame scores.
I want Willie Taggart. It's like, I've replaced Do Something with guys who don't care about anything.
You should. Guys that don't care about anything or Navy. Who would you rather play? I know it's a tough job. All right. At Dubs and Dubs. Well, Dubs and Dubs. That's right. Andy exposed Stanford by running the ball. Is this the place where Virginia Tech can be exposed as well?
Not statistically, not yet. Right. I mean, throw out the stats from the Old Dominion game.
They would like to.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a loss, and they blew it. But Florida State, 28 carries, 94 yards. William and Mary, well, I guess you should throw that one
out,
too.
You can throw Florida State, 20, too,
then. Yeah, no kidding. Well, okay, Duke, 36 carries, 71 yards against Florida State. So, and they just, you know, their D-line's good. They just lost. They threw their best pass rusher off the team. But it's still a pretty good defensive front against the run. So, you know, you take nothing for granted. When you're undefeated going on the road, you take absolutely nothing for granted.
Like Virginia Tech going to Old Dominion. I mean, they're good. Better teams lose to inferior teams all the time. Sometimes it's because they go on the road. Sometimes it's the better team wasn't.
Which is why coaches say, no, I wasn't surprised at A, B, C, D. No.
Yeah, exactly.
Double Domer Scott, on a scale of 1 to 100, with 100 signifying absolute certainty, how confident will Notre Dame be mentally? How confident are you that Notre Dame will be mentally prepared and focused to play its best Saturday given the hostile environment at Virginia Tech?
27.
That low?
Yeah.
I was going to put like 50.
I mean, how many times do we need to see this?
Right. I agree with it. But I'd go higher. I would guess they will, so I have to go a little higher.
If there's a 27% chance of something happening, that means it could still happen. I mean, I'm not saying it's zero, but
it's not an option.
So. I've just seen, I saw Miami and saw Stanford last year, even though Notre Dame was winning in the fourth quarter. I've just seen Notre Dame go on the road and start flat, like at Arizona State a few years ago. Look, they haven't won their final road game since 2012. And they've gotten pasted in a handful of them. So could they win and really make a huge national statement on Saturday night? Absolutely. But would I bet on a Stanford-like performance at Virginia Tech? Absolutely not.
Oh, to play its best is what you're going with.
Well, I mean, that's the question.
You're right. You're
mentally prepared and focused, locked in. Like, to me, that wouldn't apply winning 28-27.
Yeah, I don't know how to put a number on this because I would guess, you know, I would certainly pick something above 50% confidence that they would, but I would probably shave off 15 points just for Alex Barr's not playing.
Yeah.
So if I felt like it was 65, I'm down to 50, or if I felt like it was 70, I'm down to 55. I don't know.
I guess I think Miami helps.
Well, hypothetical number, minus 15.
They're, I think, more mentally prepared and focused to play. I think they will be. I don't know if they'll play their best game. I think other factors stop you from playing your best game, like not having Alex Barrs, like a regression to the mean with your quarterback that has, what does he have, nine touchdowns and no turnovers going out there, right? Ten touchdowns and no turnovers.
Right.
Like, there's something.
Yeah.
You might have one running back who has a history of not playing well in back-to-back games. You might be the only guy out there, Dexter Williams, and then you're throwing in, what if Dexter Williams turns his ankle? How focused are you then with Jameer Smith handling the whole game?
That's what I'm saying. That's why they've hit this breaking point of like, God, like Barrs is just, that's just a huge loss. Barrs is a guy that if you're like, you're going to Virginia Tech, great.
Right. Alex Barrs, there are so many other people on the team.
You're going to Virginia Tech. I'm like, yeah, that chaos period where you practice with a soccer ball is only going to take you so
far. I do think that.
How much is that going to come up?
The Miami experience is fresh with this team. That's still an open wound with this team.
Yeah.
It's the only time anyone's ever admitted coaching and players being intimidated. Yeah. Can you remember? And it took 4 weeks, but they did it. Can you remember anyone ever admitting those things until that? Drew Tranquil, Julian Love, and Brian Kelly. Those proud players and coaches admitted. They couldn't handle it.
Well, it was just like, it was so obvious.
We were getting sick of the other answer, I guess.
Yeah. It was just like, give us the truth, man. I mean,
I will forever regret not experiencing that. Okay. I absolutely will. I,
What were you doing?
I was sloughing off. Yes. And I mean, I do really think that that Miami experience is significant, and that's definitely a theme that I'm going to explore this week with them and Kelly. That, I mean, that has to play, that has to be beneficial to Notre Dame.
They can't wait to talk about it.
Should I? Yeah. Should I ask Dalen Hayes before the game if he knows how loud it is?
I think on Thursday to commemorate last year, I asked Brian Kelly. It's like, what do you expect the crowd noise to be like? And he says, at Michigan State, I'll be picking a loss.
I don't know. Like, Dalen Hayes is having a very underrated season. He's doing a great – I thought he's had a great last 2 weeks. I will never forget Dalen Hayes asking me, is it supposed to be loud there? When I asked him the question, have you seen how loud it is? And he acted like, nothing loud bothers us. Guess really? You haven't heard anything loud before because it's about to bother you. There was a
last question. C-Bus Irish. After your trip to Blacksburg this weekend, what venues remain on your college football bucket list?
That's pretty much all SEC as I was writing this down. I mean, I haven't been – my first year traveling was after – or they went to A&M, and I didn't travel when they went to Nebraska. So those would be two. But the rest of them, like – I guess – I mean, Alabama I think would be probably number one for me to go to and check that out. But, I mean, Lane Stadium is up there, and then I haven't been to LSU either. I think that would be pretty incredible.
I lived in Atlanta for 10 years, so I did do the SEC thing. I've been to most of them, the Swamp, and Alabama stunk when I went. It's a long, long time ago. It's 2001. I think they've won every national title since. But, Georgia. I never went to Auburn, so Jordan-Hare would be on there. The Rose Bowl. I've never been to the Rose Bowl.
Oh, that was nice.
I'd love to do that one. It's not really my bucket list Outson Stadium. It looks kind of cool when you see how loud it is, and it's a 30-something thousand place. But Kyle Field. I've never been to Kyle Field either. I did do the Nebraska trip, which pretty much negated any. After that trip, there's no Notre Dame person traveling, and that was 2000.
You were like your friends that you listed earlier.
They were with me there. Yeah, and
going to road games.
That was an RV. Oh, that's bad luck. You don't want my friends at road games. Now we do pick all the biggest ones. So yeah, that's why that tends to.
I've been to LSU, I've been to A&M, I've been to Nebraska. I haven't been to Alabama. I saw Notre Dame get murdered by Alabama in Birmingham, and it might as well have been Alabama that day.
Or
Miami. I haven't been to Auburn. I've been to the Rose Bowl, but I'd like to go to the Rose Bowl, the game, as opposed to. In Autzen Stadium, my oldest brother lives there, and I have not actually been there. But
you're busy on the phone.
It would be yes.
I would like to wrap up our.
Oh, I didn't. I'm sorry. Athens, Georgia. That would be at the top of my list.
That's a place.
Between the hedges, that expression. They planted hedges in there, and that expression I've always thought is fascinating.
I can't wait to go back there. But my Alabama experience is worth telling. Tailgating outside. It was Alabama, Arkansas. This is September 2001, so it's a couple weeks after. September 11th, and people aren't really traveling. We drove to the game from Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Tailgating. It's about 95 degrees outside, hottest day of all time. And there's some older ladies coming down the tailgate row asking for whiskey. So,
I
like them already. So, I mean, they're in their 70s. They're walking up and down the row of tailgaters. And so, you know, we had Jack Daniels. I was like, she goes, yeah, any Dickel? And I had no idea what George Dickel was then at that point in my life. But of course, my friend who's from Georgia, pulls it out of his back pocket flask. So we try to get these women little cups, of course, because they're 70 years old, to walk around with. He's like, no, that's all right. Just takes it, pours it in your hand, and shoves it in your mouth. That was my Alabama experience. Into the hand, into the mouth. Walks on.
Okay, from Alabama to Lane Stadium in Blacksburg, Virginia. We'll be talking about that on Thursday when we preview Notre Dame, number 6 Notre Dame against 3-1 Virginia Tech. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Irish Illustrated Insider Podcast. If you enjoy our coverage of Notre Dame football, please consider supporting the podcast with a small donation. Go to irishillustrated.com/support. Your support will help Irish Illustrated continue to be the leader in coverage of Notre Dame athletics.